Hello guys, welcome back to the MMA Sucker Podcast. My name's Fraser Curran, and as always, we're back. We took a little bit of a hiatus over the holiday period, but we're back. We're ready to hit 2024 head on with the podcast. Gonna have plenty. I'm gonna put a lot more, try and get a lot more features into the podcast. But this, guys, is our annual MMA award show for 2023. It's been a really good year in the world of MMA, I feel, in 2023. We've had plenty of talking points. We've had a lot of controversy. We've had a lot of big fights. We haven't always had the fights that we've exactly wanted. But, you know, the UFC have adapted as they always do and put on really good fights. The PFL have really sort of progressed this year, I feel, as to really cement themselves as the second promotion in MMA. I feel that ONE Championship maybe actually took a little step back, but you know, I'll maybe go on to talk about that in a different show. But like I said, this is the MMA Sucker Podcast Awards for 2023. So start kicking off straight off the bat, Male Fighter of the Year. So how I'm gonna do these awards is I'm gonna give you the winner of the awards. And then I'm going to give you a couple of honorable mentions and then a little bit of criteria for each and every award that I give. So Male Fighter of the Year, for me, that's pretty unquestionable. It's got to be Sean Strickland. Sean Strickland is MMA Sucker Podcast, Fraser Crohn's MMA Sucker Podcast Fighter of the Year for 2023. He's gone 3-0, including a huge upset win over Israel Adesanya. And he's already booked for next year, which is, for me, something that I think's, you know, really important. You know, he's already booked to face Dricus du Plessis at UFC 297. But this year, like I said, he's gone 3-0. Let's not forget, he was entering 2023 off the back of two straight losses to Alex Pereira, the KO, and then to a unanimous decision, sorry, a split decision loss to Jared Cannonier on December the 17th. He competed on January the 14th against Nasruddin Imanov, obviously taking that one on short notice. That was up at light heavyweight, and he won that. And then we had the strange main event, the Fight Night main event against Abbas Magomedov, who really had no business being in there with someone of Sean Strickland's caliber. And then he went on to face Israel Adesanya at UFC 293 in Sydney, Australia, for the middleweight championship. Now, let's not forget, this was essentially supposed to be Dricus du Plessis' fight, and that one never actually materialized between Dricus and Izzy. And Sean Strickland, not only did he go over to Australia, not only did he go five rounds, but he dominated the fight. I'm just going to pull up the scorecards here. 49-46 on all three scorecards. Let's not forget he dropped Israel Adesanya as well. Israel Adesanya, the striking phenom of the UFC, of the middleweight division, and he was dropped by Sean Strickland, and it was just a phenomenal performance. Izzy was miles off it that day. Sean was miles on it that day, and I think that performance alone kind of cements him as the Male Fighter of the Year for 2023. And like I say, he's already booked for January of 2024 to defend his make the first defense of his middleweight title against Dricus du Plessis. And you know, if he keeps up that same form and same sort of work ethic, as it were, we could see him being the Male Fighter of 2024 as well. A couple of honorable mentions: Islam Makhachev, 2-0, making two defensive of his lightweight title, both against Alexander Volkanovski. The reason I didn't pick him is because the second fight, obviously, Volkanovski took it on short notice. Yes, he emphatically knocked out Volkanovski, but you know, that first fight was rate. I probably had Volkanovski winning that first fight, and yes, he put a stamp on it second time, but Volk took the fight on 10 days' notice. But that doesn't take anything away from Islam Makhachev. It was a phenomenal year for Islam. And Alejandro Pantoja for me as well. 2-0 as well. Epic battle with Brandon Moreno. He's really cemented himself as the flyweight king, really. And then he had that dominant decision victory over Brandon Royval last time out. And he's also set up for a big 2024. You know, he's like I say, he's cemented himself as the champion now, and he's got plenty of contenders in the ranks. You know, the winner of Brandon Moreno versus Amir Albazi, the winner of Alex Perez versus Mohamed Mokaev. You've got Manel Capp and Mateus Nicolau on the sort of outside. So I think Pantoja's up for a tough but really good 2024 as well. Moving on, we've got Female Fighter of the Year. This as well for me was fairly obvious. Women's bantamweight in the UFC didn't really ever get going. Obviously, we've got the interim title to be contested next month. We've got Zhang Weili. She made one defense of her title. Yes, it was extremely, extremely dominant. But for me, Alexa Grasso, Women's Female Fighter of the Year 2023 for the MMA Sucker Podcast, Alexa Grasso. She's 2-0, and like Sean Strickland, a huge upset. But not only did she upset Valentina Shevchenko, she finished Valentina Shevchenko. She not only did she finish Valentina Shevchenko, but in the rematch, again, you know, yes, it was a draw, but she retained her title. Alexa Grasso, she'd become a humongous star this year as well. Really, really big star. I think realistically, she'll headline the UFC. Oh, I think she'll become a headline star, if not a headline star. You know, she's got a likable personality. She's got a really fun style. You know, she has slick boxing and clearly a good ground game. But you've got to take into account just how dominant Valentina Shevchenko was at flyweight. You've got to take into account that, you know, no one had really, you know, apart from Talia Santos, no one had really challenged Valentina Shevchenko. And we also have to take into account and remember that, yes, she got the submission victory, but she was doing extremely well on the feet as well, Alexa Grasso. So, like I said, Alexa Grasso, Female Fighter of the Year for me. One win, one draw, but, you know, is a new flyweight champion and is progressing to being an absolutely huge mega star, especially in Mexico. Honorable mentions for me, Larissa Pacheco went 4-0 and Dakota Ditchova went 3-0. Ditchova, three finishes and she won the flyweight tournament. Larissa Pacheco went 2-2, two finishes, two unanimous decision victories. They both win their respective tournaments in emphatic fashion. Dakota Ditchova in particular, you know, she burst onto the scene this year and we'll go on to talk about her again later on. But 3-0, three finishes, flyweight, PFL flyweight tournament champion, and she'll take that momentum into 2024. And you know, it's going to take some stopping Dakota Ditchova. Moving on, we've got the KO of the year. Now, this one is one I want to caveat with a little sort of a little bit of reasoning behind the my choice. For me, it's caliber of opponent that really matters in this one. How good is the stand-up of the opponent? It's the storyline behind the fight itself and what the KO actually means. And it's the obviously the fashion of the KO. For me, the winner, MMA Sucker Podcast winner for knockout of the year is Israel Adesanya knocking out Alex Pereira. For me, the storyline with Izzy being, you know, having been finished in the fight beforehand, in the final round, having been winning that fight, to come back from that loss and not only come back from the loss and win the fight, but come back from the loss and knock out Alex Pereira. Phenomenal, phenomenal knockout. The fashion of the knockout as well, the fact that Alex was unloading on Izzy against the cage, as we've seen him, as we saw him doing that first fight in the UFC. Izzy was taking some big shots and just returned sniper-like. The celebration after the fact, I thought was, you know, it wasn't over the top, it wasn't disrespectful. I thought it was apt for the moment. The sequence, like I say, the sequence as to the fact that Alex was unloading and was landing those hooks to the body and hooks to the head, and then Izzy just returns with that slick 1-2, and then the hammer fist to finish it off. And like I say, you've got to take into account the caliber of opponent. Alex Pereira is one of the best kickboxers we've ever seen in the UFC, and Israel Adesanya knocked him out. If Israel Adesanya was to out wrestle him for 5 rounds or something to that ilk, we could always say, well, yeah, that's not Alex's strong point. Israel Adesanya knocked out Alex Pereira sort of at his own game, in the stand-up round. Phenomenal knockout, phenomenal sequence of events. The caliber of opponent is what's done it for me. And that caliber of opponent is what, will lead into my honorable mentions. I was, up until I think yesterday or the day before, picking Josh Emmett's knockout over Bryce Mitchell. But with the greatest respect to Bryce Mitchell, you've got to take into account the caliber of opponent. And Bryce Mitchell's never been a striker. He's never been good at striking. Josh Emmett is a scary knockout artist. If, I think he could have scored knockout of the year every year, for that knockout over Ricardo Lamas, the knockout over Michael Johnson, and now the knockout over Bryce Mitchell. But like I say, you do have to take into account the caliber of opponent. And Bryce Mitchell, unfortunately for Josh Emmett, isn't the caliber of striker that Alex Pereira is in comparison to Israel Adesanya. So he gets a certainly gets an honourable mention because it's a phenomenal knockout. Maybe a little bit of recency bias as well. Obviously, it only happened a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, honourable mention for Josh Emmett, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Josh Emmett win plenty of knockout of the years on other platforms awards. Amber Liebrock's head kick over Martina Jindrova, really, really good knockout, I thought. The snap and the fact that Jindrova just dropped with that one, and I'll be honest, I think the PFL sort of ref cam really helped that one out because we've seen it multiple times online from the ref cam perspective. It's a really good knockout, but I do think the camera angle helped that. Staying with the PFL, Dumbier's PFL Paris knockout. The walkout with the mattress, the crowd interaction before the fight, and then the quick knockout. Really, really good. And a little shout out to Lorenz Larkin's brutal elbow over Mukhamed Berkhamov. I think that one's certainly going under the radar, but it's a that's a really good knockout. But like I said, for me, Israel Adesanya's knockout over Alex Pereira to recapture the middleweight title is the 2023 knockout of the year. That leads us nicely into submission of the year. This one, for me, we haven't had a standout submission of the year this year. It's between, many different. There's a number of different submissions that it could have been. Like I say, there hasn't been the Mighty Wizbar submission, for example. There hasn't been the Korean Zombie or Bryce Mitchell Twister submission this year. That's really stood out in my mind. I've given it to somebody for the. I've given the submission of the year. So the submission, the MMA Sucker Podcast submission of the year, Davy Grant's inverted triangle choke over Rafaela Sun Sao. For me, I've given this one because we know Sun Sao is extremely good on the ground. He's only been submitted, he's got 10 losses, he's only been submitted 3 times. It was in Rafaela Sun Sao's retirement bout as well. But for me, the difficulty of this submission is what's got it. The fact that Davy Grant had been deducted a point in the, I think in the first or in the third round for grabbing the fence. So he was down on the scorecards, or he was looking at a draw at least. And he managed to pull off an inverted triangle. I think it's a really, really good submission. And like I said, I don't think there's been a standout submission this year. So I have given it to Davy Grant for the inverted triangle over Rafaela Sun Sao. But there's two honourable mentions for me, and one that I don't really understand. The honourable mentions for me, Grasso over Shevchenko. Like I said, I think it's a really good submission. She capitalised on the fact that Shevchenko spins and sometimes gives up, almost turns away from her opponent and essentially gives up her back. And Grasso, like I say, capitalised on that, jumped on the back, got the rear naked choke, and forced Shevchenko to tap. And what makes that one so good is that she was drilling it beforehand. I think what made Davy Grant so good is that, he was opportunistic with it. He did it on the fly, as it were. Whereas Grasso was drilling it. So it's whatever you prefer, Davy Grant adapted to the situation. Grasso saw the opening that she'd been drilling and ran with it. Shavkat Rakhmonov's standing rear naked choke against Jeff Neal, the way he intertwined the legs and then choke Jeff Neal out again, adapting on the fly to the situation. I think that was a really good submission. I do think that, Jeff Neal kind of was out on his feet almost in that one, so it made the submission slightly easier. But I'll be honest, I really don't understand the hype of the John Jones guillotine choke over, or front choke over Ciryl Gane. It was a good submission. Ciryl Gane is not a good grappler. We saw him out grappled by Francis Ngannou. For me, for someone of John Jones caliber, it's a fairly standard submission. I don't really get it. It was a strange position, don't get me wrong, but yeah, I don't get the hype around that one for me. But you know, if it's actually submission of the year, I've got no problems with it. But I just think Davy Grant was better. I think Shavkat Rakhmonov was better, and I think Alexa Grasso was better. So the breakout star of the year for me, this is someone that's had a breakout year. As obvious as it might sound, they need to have captured the headlines. They need to have got themselves into a position where they set up a big 2024, and they need to have got some good caliber, you know, solid wins. And that is the reason why Benoit Saint-Denis is my breakout star of the year. He's 3-0 in 2023 with three finishes, broken into the top 15, and he's due a big fight in 2024. What I think is so important for Benoit Saint-Denis is that, you know, he had a good 2022. Of course, he made his UFC debut in 2021 on fairly short notice, from what I understand. From what I remember, sorry, he went 2-0 in 2022. But you know, he's had three fights since July in 2023, fight of the night and a performance of the night, winning bonuses. But with each fight, he's progressed, you know, sort of higher up the rankings. Ismael Bonfim, he submitted him via face crank in July, and then in his native Paris, France, he TKO Thiago Moises in a fight of the night, and then he got a performance of the night for that. If let's not forget that brutal head kick that could have won knockout of the year, I feel, over Matt Frivola at UFC 295. So with each fight, he's got a slightly better caliber of opponent every time. Matt Frivola obviously in the top 15. Benoit Saint-Denis is now in the top 15. I'll just pull up the rankings here because I do believe that he's quite highly ranked in at lightweight. And I think he's a problem for anyone at lightweight. He's got a good grappling base. He's got clearly good striking. So Benoit Saint-Denis, yeah, ranked number 12. I think he's a tough matchup for, you know, Rafael dos Anjos at number 11, Jalen Turner, Dan Hooker, Fazeev, Dariush, even Gamrot, I think, is it. And then you're looking at the top five after that. So Benoit Saint-Denis is my breakout star of the year. 3-0, three finishes, two performance of the night, two post-fight bonuses, performance of the night and fight of the night, and has set up a really big 2024 for himself. Phenomenal year for the Frenchman. Honourable mentions, like I said, Dakota Dichova, 3-0, three finishes, won the flyweight tournament in the PFL. She's a huge PFL star now. PFL have put a lot of sort of effort and emphasis into promoting Dakota Dichova. And rightfully so. She's a star. She's a good talker. You know, she's good on social media, and she's phenomenal in the cage as well. So that's what's important. Ian Garry, I think, deserves an honorable mention. For better or for worse, he's been in the limelight this year. Let's not forget 2023, he's got three victories, two finishes and a decision. And like Benoit Saint-Denis, each win I feel has progressed in difficulty. TKO'd Song Kenyan, he TKO'd Daniel Rodriguez, and then he went to a decision with Neil Magny. He was, of course, set to meet Vicente Luque, and if he would have beat Luque, he would have been my breakout star of the year, possibly even, you know, knocking on the door for fighter of the year. He had to withdraw from that one. And now he's scheduled to face Jeff Neal. So like I said, three good performances. He's been in the media for better or for worse a lot in 2023. And he's already, you know, like I say, he's already scheduled for 2024. So, you know, we could be looking at a male fighter of the year candidate next year. If, you know, he's competing in he's competing at UFC 298 in February. So there's a chance that he does kind of, you know, get that big 2024 that he wants. You know, if he competes in February, you can get him out again in in, May, June, get him out again, maybe, August, September, and then maybe again in December. He does like to stay busy, but for me, it's Benoit Saint-Denis is just broken out a little bit more. And Bo Nickel's got to be in there. Made his debut this year, 2-0 in the UFC. I do think that at the moment, the guy is he's calling out all and sundry. He made his debut performance of the night over Jamie Pickett, and then he beat Val Woodburn on who took the fight on short notice. He is obviously scheduled to face Cody Brundage at UFC 300. So it could be a big year for Bo Nickel. I do think that he needs a big step up in competition. I think that he's considerably better than the opposition that he's facing at the moment. Fair play to the UFC to get Val Woodburn in there on short notice, but I do think that he's a little bit better than the competition that he's faced so far. Cody Brundage will be a good test. I think he'll get through it with ease at UFC 300, and that'll maybe sets up a ranking fight for him next. Comeback of the year. Now, for me, I don't like to choose. My comeback of the year is more of a comeback story of the year rather than comeback of the year in a fight. Comeback of the year in a fight for me would probably be Edson Barboza against Sadiq Youssef. But comeback story of the year, without a shadow of a doubt. And if anyone's got a different comeback story of the year, unfortunately, you're wrong on this one. It's Impa Kasanganai. Impa Kasanganai is a 2023 MMA Sucker podcast comeback of the year. No doubt about it. Now, let's not forget, Impa Kasanganai hit the headlines, became a meme, as it were, when he was knocked out by Joaquin Buckley with that spinning, this sort of spinning two touch kick. That's rough to come back from. Not only is it a bad knockout, but it's rough to come back from as a whole. That was down at middleweight. I spoke to Impa this year. I also spoke to Dakota Ditcheva this year. So if there's a if there's any guys out there that want to win their respective tournament, come and speak to the MMA Sucker podcast with Fraser Crone, because I spoke to Dakota Ditcheva this year. She won her tournament. I spoke to Impa Kasanganai this year. Spoiler, he won his tournament. And we spoke to Melissa Dixon this year. She went on to go 1-0 in the UFC and is looking at a big 2024. But that's just a side note. If anyone's listening and wants to win a million-dollar tournament like Impa Kasanganai, the MMA Sucker podcast is the place to be. But like I said, back to the point, Impa Kasanganai, that knockout by Joaquin Buckley in 2020, that could have seriously harmed a lot of people mentally. Now, in 2023, Impa Kasanganai has gone 5-0 with three finishes, and he's won the PFL light heavyweight million-dollar tournament. The mental strength of Impa Kasanganai is second to none, in my opinion. I think the guy is he's a really nice guy. He's got a really fun style that, he can make he's a well-rounded mixed martial artist. He's not just a striker, he's not just a wrestler. He can mix the martial arts really well, which has led to him winning the million-dollar tournament. And not only did he win it, I think he dominated it. And most importantly, after that, he shot his shot. He called his shot, as it were, when he called out Francis Ngannou. That's a fight that I'd watch. Impa Kasanganai. Can you imagine an Impa Kasanganai versus Francis Ngannou fight? I think that is the biggest fight in the PFL can make realistically in 2024. I hope Impa gets that fight. I don't think he will, unfortunately, because Francis is probably going to go down the boxing route. But regardless, Impa Kasanganai is the comeback story of the year. Like I said, if you've got anybody else, unfortunately, you're wrong on this one. Impa Kasanganai, 2023 comeback of the year, 5-0, three finishes, million-dollar tournament winner, light heavyweight, defending light heavyweight champion. And when Rob Wilkinson comes back, I'd relish a fight between Impa and Rob Wilkinson. I think that would be a really, really fun fight to watch. Honorable mentions, got to go to John Jones, returned after 3 years away to secure a first-round finish, gain a second belt. That second bout is in the heavyweight division, of course. Unfortunately, we didn't see John twice last year. Obviously, he had the pec tear. Hopefully, we'll see him back out in 2024, depending on how the rehab and the recovery goes from that. And I think people are overlooking Tom Aspinall. Let's not forget, last July 2022, the knee injury. You returned in July of 2023, a year out of the octagon, put in a phenomenal performance over Martin Tybura, and then took an interim title fight on short notice and knocked Sergey Pavlovich out cold in the first round to become interim heavyweight champion. I think without a doubt, it's Impi Kasanganai. But shortly after that, it's Tom Aspinall. Like I said, from injury to interim champion, in a little over a year, I think is a phenomenal feat for John Jones, for Tom Aspinall. And like I say, let's hope that we get John Jones versus Stipe Miocic, and then John Jones versus Tom Aspinall. I don't see it happening, but stranger things have happened. Moving on, we've got four more categories. Upsets of the year. Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko. No questions asked. Shevchenko was so dominant for so many years at flyweight. Alexa Grasso, no one was really giving her an awful, we knew how good Alexa Grasso was, but not many people gave her much of a chance against Valentina Shevchenko. She's sort of softly spoken, she's softly spoken, she's a little timid. She comes across a little timid sometimes, but and you're going in there against an absolute killer in Valentina Shevchenko. Shevchenko's enjoying a prolonged, well, she'd never lost at flyweight for a start, but she was enjoying a prolonged dominant flyweight run of what, two, four, six, seven fight winning streak. Multiple knockouts, multiple performance of the night bonuses. And then she ran into Alexa Grasso, who, like I said, Alexa Grasso was riding a win streak of her own, a four fight win streak, three decisions and a rear naked choke over Joanne Wood. And she shocked the world. She shocked the world. There's no doubt about it. And that's why the rematch happened. And the rematch, Shevchenko wasn't able to win the rematch, or and wrestle the bout away from Alexa Grasso. But like I said, I think without a doubt that the upset of the year was Grasso over Shevchenko. I'm not sure about the odds on that fight, but I know that Shevchenko would have been a favorite. See if I can just pull them up on Tapology now, but I don't know if I'll be able to find them. But like I said, did Valentina Shevchenko kind of overlook Alexa Grasso? Potentially, so according to Tapology, Valentina Shevchenko was a -900 favorite to beat Alexa Grasso. Valentina Shevchenko, -900, and you could get Alexa Grasso at +575, which just kind of tells you exactly, and how favorable a Valentina Shevchenko win was. What's also interesting is that in the rematch, the odds completely changed. Yes, Alexa Grasso is still the underdog, but she was +575. She then went, she the odds were narrowed to +145, and Valentina Shevchenko, let's not forget, she was a -900 favorite. In the rematch, she was a -175 favorite. So that just shows what kind of a performance Alexa Grasso put in to beat Valentina Shevchenko that first time round, and then obviously pull off the draw in the second fight. Honorable mentions for me, it's got to be Strickland versus Adesanya. No one gave Strickland a chance. Again, I'll pull up the odds because I'm pretty sure that Strickland would have been even larger odds than Alexa Grasso. I wouldn't be surprised, I should say, if he was larger odds. So he's a +470 underdog, and Izzy was a -650 favorite. So again, that kind of shows just how favorable Israel Adesanya was. What I think is given Grasso the edge over Strickland is that Izzy looked off in that fight. Shevchenko didn't. Shevchenko just looked like she was beaten in that fight, whereas Izzy did look off against Sean Strickland. And I think Jesus Pinedo, sorry, versus Brendan Loughnane is a big upset as well. I don't it's not in the upset of the year category, but it's definitely worth an honorable mention. Loughnane, obviously, the 2022 PFL 2022 PFL featherweight tournament winner. Just gonna pull up this one. Yeah, 2022 PFL tournament winner, defeated Marlon Moraes via leg kick in April, and then was not only did he lose, but he was finished by Jesus Pinedo, who obviously went on to win the tournament and become the first Peruvian champion in the PFL. So shout out to him. Event of the year for me, UFC 295. Now, this was a difficult one because my honorable mentions, I'll say them straight off the bat, UFC 285 and UFC 290. I think the UFC put on some really good events this year. I think Bellator 300 could have been in there, but due to the sort of fallout of that event, it's not. And due to the sort of uncompetitive nature of some of those fights, for me, is what sort of led to that one not quite, getting the honorable mention that it maybe deserves. Although I have mentioned it now, so maybe that is an honorable mention. But no, UFC 295 for me. The early prelims and prelims were a little bit slow, I'll be honest. They were a little bit slow. We got a lot of decisions, a couple of TKOs, a submission in there. But for me, it's the main card that really won UFC 295, the event of the year. Five straight knockouts, and all of them were really good fights. Diego Lopez knocking out Pat Sabatini in the first round. Benoit Saint-Denis, like I mentioned earlier, knocking out Matt Frivola with a head kick in the first round. Jessica Andrade battering and dominating Mackenzie Dern to a second round TKO. Big Tom Aspinall finishing Sergey Pavlovich in 1 minute and 9 seconds to capture the interim heavyweight title. And Alex Pereira finishing Jiří Prochazka on Jiří's return, Alex's, quest to get a second UFC belt in next to no fights at all. TKO in the second round. That's pretty unheard of to get five knockout finishes, of which, the longest one of the fights went was the main event, and that was 9 minutes and 8 seconds. That was 4 minutes and 8 seconds into the second round. All five of those guys on the main card got a performance of the night bonus. Not only was it a great main card, but it was in MSG, which is, historic for big card, the big fight, sorry. I really do think that, that was the card that constantly kept my attention. Knockout for Diego Lopez, who himself could have been, breakout star of the year, really good year for him. Knockout for Diego Lopez, followed by a knockout for Benoit Saint-Denis. Domination and then a knockout for Jessica Andrade. Quick, dominant, I think surprising to many people how quick it happened, knockout for Tom Aspinall. And then a bit of a chess match followed by a good knockout by Alex Pereira. UFC 295 for me is event of the year. Like I said, honorable mention goes out to UFC 290 International Fight Week. I thought this was a really good card as well. Plenty of good performances on this card. Robbie Lawler's retirement fight, obviously over the 38-second knockout over Nico Price. Bo Nickel, like I said earlier, defeating Val Woodburn. Dan Hooker and Jalen Turner putting in one of the best fights of the year. One of the best fights of the year in over three rounds at least. Dricus du Plessis knocking out Robert Whittaker in the second round. I'll go on to talk a little bit about about this fight in more detail later, but Alejandro Pantoja versus Brandon Moreno, for the flyweight title, and then domination from Alexander Volkanovski over Yair Rodriguez. And UFC 285 also gets an honorable mention. John Jones's return, of course, dominating Cyril Gane. Alexa Grasso's big win, as we've spoken about many times on this show already, over Valentina Shevchenko, Shavkat Rakhmonov, who we've also mentioned, this win over Jeff Neal, Mateus Gamrot and Jalen Turner put in a really fun fight. Bo Nickel again featuring when he making his debut on the main card to submit Jamie Pickett. And then we've got the likes of Ian Garry was on this card with a finish. Amanda Ribas was on this card with a decision victory. Dricus du Plessis, obviously, corner stoppage over Derek Brunson, and Cody Garbrandt returned. I'll be honest, guys, I forgot to do fight of the year. I meant to put it in after submission of the year. My fight of the year, it's a tough one for me. It does go to UFC 295 co-main event, Brandon Moreno versus Alejandro Pantoja. Sorry, 290. UFC 290 co-main event, Brandon Moreno versus Alejandro Pantoja. Pantoja wins a split decision victory, 49, 48-47, 48-47, and then 49-46 the other way to Brandon Moreno. Phenomenal flyweight bout, and exactly what we want and what we expect these days from the flyweights. Really competitive, high-paced fight. We got plenty of. It was nice to see a flyweight title contested between somebody not named Brandon Moreno and Deiveson Figueiredo. It just seems that those two guys had fought 100 times for the belt. Pantoja got the opportunity and grabbed it with both hands. Combined almost 700 strikes thrown. Really good competitive fight with plenty of exchanges on the feet, on the ground. Both men left everything in there. I think I do agree with the victory with the outcome. I do think Alejandro Pantoja, deserved to win that fight. Also on the card, I think we had we should get an honorable mention for the two honorable mentions. So like I said, MMA Sucker Fight of the Year. I had forgotten about it. I've put it in at the end now. Alejandro Pantoja's victory over Brandon Moreno at UFC 290. Would I watch it again? Absolutely. A rematch between them two really hopefully does happen. But we'll see in 2024 if that comes to light. Honorable mention on the same card, actually, Dan Hooker versus Jalen Turner. How Dan Hooker took that head kick, I will not know. And slight recency bias in my other honorable mention, but it has to go in there. I mean, this is the closest. If I could pick two, a joint fight of the year, it's Irene Aldana versus Carl Rosa. I thought this fight was absolutely phenomenal. Maybe a little bit of recency bias, but both women, how Aldana continued to take those leg kicks, I do not know. How Rosa continued to stay on her feet after the swift jabs that both women bloodied. No, neither woman took a step back. It's just an absolutely phenomenal war between both women, and it was a really fun fight. And hats off to both women. These are the fights in that fight of Irene Aldana versus Carl Rosa, Dan Hooker and Jalen Turner, and of course Pantoja and Moreno. These are the fights where even the guy or girl who didn't get their hand raised on the night, their stock rises without a doubt. Jalen Turner's stock rose, Brandon Moreno's stock rose, and of course Carl Rosa's stock rose, as well as the winners on those occasions. And they've put themselves kind of in the shop window, as it were, for fun fights in the future, and that's what's most important. Just a quick one, Gym of the Year. I think it's got to go to Extreme Couture. Sean Strickland, they Eric Nixick and the guys there masterminded the win over Israel Adesanya for Sean Strickland. Really good victory for Sean, as we know. And Francis Ngannou, who, let's be honest, pulled off a victory and wasn't given the nod against Tyson Fury. Eric Nixick was, of course, in his corner for that one in Saudi Arabia. I think there wasn't, for me, a team that really stood out this year. In previous years, we've had City Kickboxing stand out with, you've got your Dan Hookers, your Kai Kara France, Volkanovski, Israel Adesanya, those guys. Not really a team that's really stood out. AKA has done well, obviously, with the Nurmagomedov in Bellator, and Islam Makhachev, of course, in the UFC. So they get an honorable mention. Killcliff MMA, I think, have to get an honorable mention. They've just got a solid guy throughout their whole team, including Shavkat Rakhmonov, who's really the standout star for me from Killcliff. Usman as well. Usman, yes, he went 0-2 in 2023, but they were, facing Leon Edwards and Khamzat Chimaev, is a tough ask for anyone. And I also want to give an honorable mention to Tom Aspinall's heavyweight team. He's obviously left Team Cowbomb, but Tom Aspinall has surrounded himself with a load of big English heavyweights, which I'll be honest, are hard to come by in the UK, high level heavyweight fighters. And Tom Aspinall surrounded himself with a really good bunch of guys, and it's paid off. He's interim champion of the world. So yeah, big shout out to Tom Aspinall's heavyweight team. I'm not sure if they've got an official name, but yeah, Tom Aspinall's heavyweight team, I think, deserve a big shout out. And just to round off the year, to round off the podcast, to round off the MMA Sucker podcast awards, story of the year. It was closely contested between Fraser Crone taking the podcast on his own after co-host Tim Wheaton had to leave the podcast. That is a huge story for the world of MMA, but narrowly defeating that story, unfortunately, for the MMA Sucker podcast is Francis Ngannou leaving the UFC after a contract dispute, signing for the PFL. Included in that contract is the freedom to box. Having a fight signed with Tyson Fury, outboxing Tyson Fury over 10 rounds, not being given the decision. Everybody in the boxing world believes that he should have got the decision, and now has set himself up for an absolutely humongous 2024, whether it be in MMA or in boxing. Without a doubt, Francis Ngannou's 2024 is the story of the year for me. Which is ironic because he hasn't competed in MMA. The story of the year is usually, sort of, I think we had James Krause's betting scandal as the story of the year last year. Like I said, this year for me is Francis Ngannou being, cut from the UFC essentially over a contract dispute, signing for the PFL, which shocked many people. That boxing match against Tyson Fury, and now, he's very much in the shop window for high level boxing, whether it be Anthony Joshua, whether it be Deontay Wilder, whether it be, a rematch with Tyson Fury, Alexander Usyk even, it's an exciting time for Tyson, for Francis Ngannou, and he deserves it. Another, honorable mention, like I said, the MMA Sucker podcast being taken on by Fraser Crone alone. But the second honorable mention that I should give is obviously the PFL taking over Bellator, acquiring Bellator and all the fighters on that roster. That's a huge story. But I do think that Francis Ngannou's 2024 is the story of the year. And I think the story of the year for 2024, just giving you a quick prediction, will involve Conor McGregor. I'm recording this on the 31st of December. Supposedly, we'll get a Conor McGregor fight announcement on the 1st. So we'll see about that. That might be something to talk about on the first podcast of 2024, but or the first recorded podcast in 2024. Of course, this will come out in 2024. But I think the story of the year will involve Conor McGregor, whether it be a retirement, whether it be a UFC 300 fight, whether it be, a title shot or some sort of contract dispute with Conor McGregor. I think he will be involved in the story of the year somehow. But that's the MMA Sucker Podcast Awards for 2023. It'll be the last podcast that I record of the year. And I just want to say thank you very much to everyone that still listens to the podcast, even though, I do it solo now. It was a big loss losing Tim, because I thought that we had really good chemistry. But, I really appreciate everyone sticking by me. It's still a new thing to me to record podcasts on my own. But at the end of the day, I appreciate every single one of you that views the podcast on YouTube. We're obviously now visual on Spotify as well. So views the podcast on Spotify. Apple Podcasts. I do check up on the views from time to time. So like I said, I just appreciate every single one of you that still has hung around to listen to my dulcet tones every week. I'm gonna, really put a lot of effort into the podcast. Not that I don't anyway, but I'm gonna really put a lot of effort into the podcast in 2024. Put a lot of energy into it. And like I said, I appreciate every single one of you that listens. Do like the video, do subscribe, do get in the comments. If you disagree with my Fighter of the Year, Male Fighter of the Year, Fighter of the Year, any of the categories, if you disagree, or if you agree, just get in the comments below, let me know. And I'll, we'll have that interaction, we'll have that discussion. And yeah, I look forward to a big 2024 with the MMA Sucker Podcast. Like I said, from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much to everyone that listens week in, week out. I appreciate it more than you'll ever know. And here's to a big 2024 in the world of mixed martial arts. So I'll catch you next time, guys. Thank you very much, and take it easy.